Borobudur, A Restored Wonder by Richard Connor. Illustrated by Tomás Benítez. Genre. Expository texts explain what certain things are and how they came to be. As you read, notice how the author explains the temple. Question of the week. What can we learn about the past by examining its relics? What is Borobudur? Borobudur is a Buddhist temple located on the island of Java in Indonesia. It is the largest Buddhist temple in the world, and people come from many different countries to visit it. The temple was constructed in the 9th century, over 1,000 years ago, but was abandoned for a long time before it was discovered again by archaeologists in 1814. What makes Borobudur special? Borobudur is important religiously, as Buddhists from around the globe visit it every year. It is also important historically, as historians argue about its origins, how it was used by the people who built it, and why it was abandoned. Architects are also interested in Borobudur because of its huge scale and the fact that it survived for so many years after being abandoned. The temple is amazing because of its huge size, as well as the artwork that covers every wall and the 504 statues of Buddha. It is also located in an incredible location, in between two active volcanoes. Indonesia. Where is Indonesia? Indonesia is a country in Southeast Asia. It is a group of over 13,000 islands in between the Asian mainland and Australia. Java, one of the larger islands in Indonesia, has the biggest population of any island in the world, with approximately 142 million people living there. Borobudur is located almost exactly in the center of the island of Java, 40 miles northwest of the nearest city, Yogyakarta. Religion in Indonesia. Indonesia has people of many different religions, although most of them, almost 90%, are Muslim. Today, less than 1% of Indonesians are Buddhists. So why is the world's largest Buddhist temple there? Well, it's because a long time ago, the rulers of Indonesia were a civilization called the Shailendra Kingdom. They introduced Buddhism to Java and built monuments celebrating their religion all over the island. In fact, Borobudur is one of three temples on the same plane, which together form a perfectly straight line. The other temples are named Mendut and Pon. This leads archaeologists to believe that there was some kind of ritual performed using these three temples together, but it is still unknown exactly what it was. Abandonment and rediscovery. Abandonment of the temple. In the 13th century, Islam came to Java, and sometime over the next 200 years, Borobudur was completely abandoned. No one knows if it was abandoned for religious reasons, or if the people left because of several volcanic eruptions, which we know happened at this time. Either way, Borobudur was left to decay and was gradually covered in volcanic ash. This ash is very fertile, so plants started growing all over the temple, and it eventually became part of the jungle. The monument was abandoned, but not forgotten. The Javanese people continued to write and talk about Borobudur. But instead of talking about its past glory, the people began to tell folk stories about the monument, and people became superstitious about it. There was a taboo against visiting the monument, and there are even stories of people dying of mysterious diseases after they climbed up to it. Rediscovery of the temple. In the early 19th century, Java was part of the British Empire. In 1814, the governor of Java was a man named Thomas Stamford Raffles. He was very interested in the history of Java, and he collected antiques and stories about Java's history. He used to talk to a lot of the local Javanese people about the myths and legends of Java, And one day, some of these people told him about a large monument deep in the jungle. Raffles sent an engineer, H.C. Cornelius, to look for the monument. Cornelius and his men spent 2 months cutting down trees and digging up the earth to uncover the stone structure. It took 2 decades to finally excavate the whole temple, but this process meant the temple was now exposed to the weather, and also to thieves who took stones to use as building materials and pieces of artwork and statues which they could sell for money. For the rest of the 19th century, the monument remained in this condition, with most people visiting it only to take souvenirs, either for their personal collections or to sell to other collectors. The ruling Dutch government even allowed a visiting king to take home dozens of artifacts from the site. The restoration of the temple, the plan. By 1900, the temple was in very bad condition. The government decided to send 3 officials to check the damage. These men made a plan to restore the monument to its full glory. This plan had 3 steps. Firstly, they wanted to make the base stronger and restore the archways, domes, and niches where the reliefs were. Secondly, they suggested restoring the floors and spouts to allow water to run off the monument more easily. Third, and last, they recommended removing all the loose stones to reduce the risk of damage to the remaining stones. The failed restoration. The archaeologists started the restoration in 1907, led by an art historian called Theodore van Erp. The first thing they did was to dig around the monument to look for missing Buddha heads, panel stones, and reliefs. After this was done, they took apart the top 3 levels and all the domes sitting on them and rebuilt them. After van Erp was finished, in 1911, Borobudur looked like it had been restored to its previous glory. However, because he didn't have a lot of money, van Erp didn't fix the water drainage system, and within 15 years, there were new mechanical problems. The walls were sinking into the mud, and the reliefs had new cracks. Over the next 50 years, restoration work was abandoned, and the temple continued to fall apart. The successful restoration. In the 1970s, UNESCO, an international group which protects famous cultural and historical buildings, decided to help restore Borobudur. They did this with money from 5 countries: Australia, Belgium, Cyprus, France, and Germany. In 1973, the new restoration had begun. The first thing they did was completely take apart the temple, which is made of over 1 million stones. These stones were individually labeled and cleaned so that when they put it back together, the archaeologists would know where every stone was supposed to go, like a big puzzle. The foundation, which supports the entire structure, was also made stronger, and this time the restorers had enough money to fix the water drainage problem. This would help to keep the monument in good condition for years to come. The restoration was finished in 1991, and UNESCO declared Borobudur a World Heritage Site. A profile of Borobudur. Why is it called Borobudur? There are no records of the name Borobudur being used before it was written by Sir Thomas Raffles, when he rediscovered the temple in 1814. It is not known whether Raffles made up this name himself or was told the name by a local person. It is possible that the name comes from putting 2 Indonesian words together, Boro, which means great, and Budur, which means Buddha. Ancient Lake Theory. In the 1930s, there was a debate among archaeologists about the land on which Borobudur was built. One of them, W.O.J. Nieuwenkamp, a Dutch artist and scholar, was arguing for the idea that Borobudur had, in fact, originally been built on a lake, and that Borobudur was built to resemble a lotus flower floating on the lake. This remained a popular idea until 1971, when scientists tested the soil near the temple and found that the surrounding area had always been farmland and that there was never a lake. The construction and structure of Borobudur Temple. Borobudur is a square pyramid shape consisting of 9 stacked platforms with dozens of small stupas, bell-shaped shrines, on each level, and 1 large stupa on top. When viewed from directly above, the temple represents a mandala, a Buddhist symbol of the universe and the mind. The main building materials used to construct Borobudur were andesite, a rock which forms from volcanic lava and was found in nearby quarries, and mortar, a paste used to glue the stone together, which we still use when we build houses today. Borobudur's structure can be split into 3 main sections: the base, the body, and the top. The base is a single square platform measuring 123 meters by 123 meters. That's bigger than a football pitch. The body is made of 5 square platforms stacked on top of each other, and the top is then 3 circular platforms. There is a single dome in the center of the platform. This is the temple's highest point at 35 meters. The lowest level is called Kamadhatu, the world of desires. Most thinking creatures live out their lives on this level. Those who manage to live without desire can advance to the next level up, called Rupadhatu, the world of forms. Only the most spiritually conscious beings may advance all the way to the top level, named Arupadhatu, the formless world. Those who reach this level are known as Buddhas and are said to have achieved the state of Nirvana. There are stairways at the center of each side of the monument, so the top can be accessed from any direction. Each stairway has several arched gateways on the way to the top, and each of these gateways has a carving of Kala on it, a divine figure representing time. Borobudur's artwork. Borobudur Temple has significant pieces of art on almost every available surface. Not only are they beautiful to admire, but they give us an idea about the type of people who built it. For one thing, the very fact they constructed such a huge place of worship gives us a hint about how important religion was in their culture. Some images also show people from many different levels of society going about their everyday business. These include kings, queens, and princes, but also commoners, servants, soldiers, and noblemen. This kind of information can be very difficult to come by for archaeologists studying such an old civilization, and this is one of the many reasons Borobudur is so precious. Reliefs. Covering almost every available wall on all 4 sides of Borobudur are a series of carvings called reliefs, depicting scenes from Shalendra myths, legends, people's everyday lives at the time, and some of the moral teachings of Buddhism. These reliefs are images carved into rectangular slabs of stone, which are then placed into niches in the wall. In fact, there are over 2,670 reliefs altogether. If they were put in a line, all the narrative reliefs together would measure 3,000 meters. The reliefs on the monument's bottom level tell stories about crimes and the punishments the people got for committing them. They also show images of people doing noble deeds and being rewarded for them. There are also scenes of everyday life, giving us a rare glimpse into 9th century Javanese culture. However, almost none of the reliefs on this level are visible today. As you can see in the cross-section illustration above, the outer wall of the lowest level is encased by a protective facade. This facade was temporarily moved during 1890, and photographs were taken of the reliefs behind it. These photos are now on display in the museum. which is very close to the temple itself. As we go higher up the monument, the reliefs begin to tell epic stories from Buddhist tradition. For example, there are several multi-panel stories depicting Siddhartha's life. Siddhartha is also known as Buddha, and it was his teachings that Buddhism was founded on. Buddha statues. Apart from the reliefs adorning almost every wall of the temple, Borobudur also boasts hundreds of Buddha statues. These watchful guardians can be seen on every level of the temple structure, sitting in a meditative or prayer position. At first glance, it looks like all these statues are identical copies. But if you look closer, you can see that they have a variety of hand positions, each with a special meaning in the Buddhist religion. This is similar to how every soldier in the Terracotta Army has a unique face, except on a smaller scale. When Borobudur was originally built, there were 504 Buddha statues. But since its rediscovery in 1814, 43 have gone missing, and 300 or so have been damaged, with many missing their heads. This is mostly because of thieves who take them to sell to collectors or museums. Borobudur in modern times. Religion. After over 600 years of neglect, Borobudur began to be used once more for its original purpose after the restoration in 1973. Buddhists now travel to the temple from around Indonesia and the world to pray, meditate, and take in some of the teachings shown in the reliefs. Once a year, Buddhists celebrate Vesak, a holiday commemorating the life of Siddhartha. During this day, pilgrims, religious travelers, walk from Mendut Temple to Pawan to Borobudur. Tourism. Since the restoration in 1973, Borobudur has consistently been the most visited tourist attraction in Indonesia. The year following the restoration, 260,000 people visited the monument. And in 2016, 3.8 million people visited Borobudur. This is generally a good thing for the country, as it brings in a lot of money. However, not everyone is happy with the situation. People have complained about the tourism board because they don't do enough to help the local community. Another problem in Borobudur is the huge number of people visiting. Overcrowding. Millions of people now visit the temple every year. This has caused damage to the monument. Just because of the number of people walking up and down the stairs every day, they have been severely eroded. Therefore, the authorities who manage the temple have suggested reducing the number of tourists allowed into Borobudur at one time to 15. On top of this, there is a myth that touching one of the Buddha statues can grant you a wish. Because of this, it has also been prohibited to touch any part of the statues or the stupas which surround them.